Hometown Heroes, honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes. So glad you're with us this time. If you've heard the program before, you know what Hometown Heroes is all about. You know that each week we visit with veterans of World War II. The idea is that no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or small your hometown might be, there are heroes around you. There are people that have done a whole lot more than you know to preserve the freedom that you and I enjoy every day. Our guest today is a real trailblazer, a guy who did something that really no one had done before, and a lot of people have followed in his footsteps. He's very proud of that legacy. A legacy that was celebrated at the U.S. Capitol this year. In the past, we've heard from the WASPs, Women Air Force Service Pilots, when they were honored with the Congressional Gold Medal. More recently, the Nisei Veterans, Japanese Americans who served in World War II while their families were held captive by our government. And this year, the Congressional Gold Medal was awarded to the Munford Point Marines at a time when segregation was a reality of life in the South, and when even our armed forces separated troops on the basis of race. There was a group of about 20,000 African Americans who proved themselves in the Marine Corps, and serving along those Munford Point Marines were Navy corpsmen to take care of the sick and wounded. That was the role of the man we are privileged to meet today. Originally from Pennsylvania, now down in Long Beach, Mr. Robert Hammond. Mr. Hammond, let's start early. I like to ask every veteran what they remember about December 7th, 1941. You had been about 15 years old at the time, and I guess your mom had some good cleanup duty for you in her beauty salon?
I was just finished cleaning the salon, and I was waxing the floor when Walter Winchell came over on the radio and made reference to the fact that Pearl Harbor had been bombed by the Japanese. I'll never forget that day.
And this was in New Jersey?
It was in Camden, New Jersey, yes.
So obviously it registered for you. You just said you'd never forget it. But what do you think the impact was on you at the time? I mean, you were a little too young to get involved right away, but did you have that inkling that maybe this would be something that you'd get sucked into at some point?
Well, young guys at the time were basically looking at movies like The Cowboys, John Wayne, and Buck Jones, Ken Maynard, all these old cowboys. And it was somewhat of being a hero, of doing something that no one else did, you know, like the Lone Ranger, something like that. He was there. And to do things outstanding and basically do it for the United States of America. Because where I grew up, I didn't grow up under the system of Jim Crow and segregation. I came from a mixed-race family. I didn't experience too much of the things that a lot of people did at that time.
It's a bit ironic that I guess you had to join the military to experience segregation, because it was a segregated armed forces. How did you end up serving in the Marine Corps as a corpsman?
Well, right after Pearl Harbor, I became a air warden. Used to ride my bicycle around. Anyone that had lights on, we would tell them to put it out. We were kind of afraid of Hitler at the time because they used to send the Graf Zeppelin over, and it had those swastikas on it as youngsters. It would land in Lake Hood, New Jersey, and they had all these ropes and things hanging down, and somebody told us, you better run and hide because those ropes are going to come down and bring you up to that Zeppelin. They're going to carry you away. So when that thing came, we would run and hide. I was much younger then when that Zeppelin came. But I'll never forget that, because that was part of what was going on in the world at the time with Adolf Hitler. He was really on the rampage at the time and doing things that was unheard of, killing a lot of people. That's how we got the stories from. We got it from the radio, and Walter Winchell, Edward R. Murrow, yeah, him especially, they would come over and talk about Hitler's conquest in Europe and things like that. And in school, I was in junior high school, I think, at the time, and they talked about the fifth column. Like, we'd go to Philadelphia at certain times and down Market Street, the brown shirts would march and carry the Nazi banner. I remember that. And we used to throw tomatoes at them and just hated it. And that swastika and the brown shirts, the flags and all that was the German-American Bund over here at the time. I didn't know what that was. I thought it was just, you know, I thought maybe it was Hitler trying to get us. But that was all part of my growing up at the time. When I became 17, my brothers, my oldest brother, he went to West Point and became a Buffalo Soldier. Matter of fact, my great-grandfather was the bandmaster for the original Buffalo Soldiers, and my oldest brother was the last of the Buffalo Soldiers because they disbanded that. They used to go on parade and things like that from West Point, and they disbanded that and put those men into Patton's Army. And so he went in the Army. My cousins went into the Army. My dad was gone. He had passed away years earlier. And it was just seeing uniforms. And all the guys wanted to wear a uniform. And at the time, I wanted one. After being an air raid warden and getting involved, became 17, I found out if I could go into the service at age 17, but the one that I could go into was the United States Navy. So I went down and joined the Navy and brought the papers back to get my mother to sign it. And she wouldn't sign it. And I said, well, if you don't sign it, I'll sign it for you. Uh-huh. So she said, you really want to go? I said, yeah, nothing's going to happen to me. I'll be all right. So she signed it and I went into the Navy.
Looking at these pictures on your wall, and I'll post them too on our website at kmjnow.com. You look every bit of that tender age of 17 with that Navy hat on after you enlisted. What was that like, being welcomed to the Navy, and did you have any idea what you were in for?
No, I did not know what I was in for. Most of my friends were Italian people, Jewish people, and Polish people. And we went to school together in Camden. And a lot of these guys, they joined the Navy too. So we got on the train and we're going to Great Lakes. And what they did, the train went south. And as it got into Washington, D.C., they put it on the side, the train. And a conductor came through. And persons of color, you got to move to another car. So I said, I'm not moving any place. I'm staying right here. You can't make me move. So my Italian friends and everybody crowded around me and they said, no, if he moves, we move. So they said, well, we'll get the police in here and lock all of you up. I said, well, we don't care. We're going to war anyway. And I said, yeah, I might as well die here than die overseas. I said, matter of fact, what's going on? And then they came in and said, well, you're down south now, and you cross the Mason-Dixon line, and we don't mix. At that time, they call us colored. Yep. They don't mix colored and white together anywhere in the south. And that was brand new to me. And it was also new to my friends. Well, we grew up together, went to school together and things like that, played ball. And they weren't going to take any stuff about all that segregation and Jim Crowism that they had in the south. So we stayed in that car. They just locked the doors on us. Wouldn't let anybody in there. So the car went through D.C., went through Virginia, and got over into, I think it was Ohio. And that's when they didn't say anything. They came through and said, oh, you guys can go wherever you want. They unlocked the doors.
It sounds like, at least for a while, that was a pretty rude awakening for you. And I guess the question is, was that a sign of similar things to come for you?
Yes, it was. Pure hell. I'll put it that way. I mean, I had to endure a lot at that time. On the way to Great Lakes, when we got there, this is in the winter, around December 14th or 15th is when I got in the Great Lakes. I had on an overcoat, two pairs of pants, a wool sweater. And when I got there, we had to stand in line outside in the cold for about 2 hours to get into camp. A man in front of me, he was just freezing. He came from the deep south and he was cold. So I took off a pair of pants and gave it to him and gave him my sweater so he could stay warm. Later on, we got in the chow hall. They fed us chicken soup and bologna sandwiches. And they gave us prune juice. Never forget that. And then they marched us over to a place where it was late at night, and we went to bed. And the next morning was pure hell that we had to go through at that camp, because this is when they sent all the white guys to one camp and all the colored guys or black guys to another camp. And I didn't understand that. I said, this is the United States Navy, and they separating us? Why? And I asked the officer, why are you doing that? He said, just shut the... Mm-hmm. Yep. And I didn't say any more. And they sent me to a place called Camp Lawrence. It was a segregated camp at Great Lakes. And I went through 6 weeks of boot training over there. We marched and everything and went through the rigors of what we had to do in the Navy at the time. Now, the strange thing that happened was my mother's brother was a captain in the Navy, and he was the personnel officer. He found out I was there, sent for me. I wouldn't give him away, though. I just said, Uncle Charlie, don't worry about it.
And am I inferring correctly that he was Caucasian?
Yes, he was. See, there's my mother's picture over there. And my sister, yes.
So no one's putting it together that you two are related. He is your Caucasian uncle, that you're the only one who knows he's your uncle.
Yes. Uh-huh. So I didn't say anything. And what he did, he put me in the Great Lakes Choir. I enjoyed that because I got liberty every weekend. We had to go into Chicago and practice and sing. We got on the radio and we'd sing all sorts of songs. Every Sunday we would sing with the Great Lakes Choir. And I did that until even through course. Captain Hayes sent, at the time, he said, Robert, I'm going to send you to course school. He said, matter of fact, we need about 20-some of you guys from Camp Lawrence to go to course school. So they gave us a test. 22 of us passed it, and we went to Navy course school and went 9 weeks of training at Great Lakes. And from there, they sent us to the Brooklyn Naval Hospital. They sent 10 of us there. The other guys went to St. Albans, to a hospital there for further training. Then things begin to happen right after that. I got used to the difference at Great Lakes. It wasn't that bad because we ate, we slept, we were clean, we had clean clothes. We could go into Chicago, went out on liberty whenever we could, and we had a lot of fun. I mean, being 17 going on 18, what do you do? You go look for girls and you drink some booze and then you just go dancing at the time. Duke Ellington and Lionel Hampton was playing Take the A-Train and Flying Home at the time. And that was the music. We didn't listen to Benny Goodman and Glenn Miller. We didn't like that kind of music. You couldn't dance to it right. We'd go into the State Theater and the Regal Theater in Chicago, and that's where I first learned about Ella Fitzgerald. She was singing there with a man named Chick Webb, a drummer. And we had a lot of fun in Chicago. But that broke up the monotony with the kinds of things we went through at Great Lakes. But anyway, from there, over at the Brooklyn Naval Hospital, that's another experience, a very traumatic experience.
And we'll find out why that was the case when Hometown Heroes continues next. Robert Hammond of Long Beach, California is our guest. You can find some photos by following Hometown Heroes Radio on Facebook. And we're going to be right back after this. If you are a World War II veteran and you have not been to the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C., Honor Flight wants to take you there, free of charge. The sooner you submit an application, the sooner Honor Flight can get you to your memorial. In Kern County or the Central Coast, call Lily Marsh at 661-544-VETS. That's 661-544-VETS. Or go to honorflightkerncounty.org. For Fresno, Madera, Merced, Mariposa, Kings, or Tulare counties, check out CV Honor. Honor Flight, CV as in Central Valley, cvhonorflight.org, or call Al Perry at 559-970-9853. That's 559-970-9853. Maybe you're the son or daughter of a veteran and you'd like to go along as a guardian. There are applications for that too, and there are other ways you can help. Donations to Honor Flight are tax deductible. We all owe our freedom and liberty to the men and women who put their lives on the line for it. Let's all come together now behind Honor Flight and give our veterans one more tour with honor.